Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
This is Dusty and Cam in the morning.
When I say, should we bring our swimsuits? You say, well, yeah, weather permitting.
With Dusty Hera.
I didn't get into college. You can check me out. I'm kick-ass.
And Cam Cleland.
I almost joined a frat in college myself, but they tried to make me chug a 40.
Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080 The Fan.
Put my nuts on the table, and then I did the damn thing.
All right, hour number two starts off here. Dusty and Cam in the morning.
66 point higher on the road. That's what this text says.
He said correction. It was the opposite.
I mean, 66 points he said, higher for Jose Altuve at home than on the road is significant enough to make a small assumption. It doesn't help you in your case, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, God, no. But I went in and I looked up because I was really interested in what the differences were between at home and on the road. And Baseball Prospectus did a write up on what it means to be a home team and how much the home field advantage means in baseball. You strike out 1% less when you're at home than on the road. You hit more doubles, triples, homers. Your balls in play are up for the home team. Basically, they just said everything at home because a lot of teams just build their rosters around your dimensions of a home field as well.
Well, that didn't work very well for Safeco at all because the home runs were garbage at home. Always hit more home runs on the road.
Yeah, you are better at home than on the road, according to a study done by Baseball Prospectus, almost in every category. And pitchers are better at home than they are on the road as well, which, I mean, that kind of makes sense as well, pitching to your dimensions. But while more on that, what can Major League Baseball do to kind of get this thing back on the right track? So a lot of that to get to. Plus, top of next hour, Oliver Maroney will join us. He works for the Big Three, works for Ice Cube, who just made a massive announcement, covers the NBA. We'll talk Blazers. Hey, hasn't this trade deadline been weird? We have not seen a trade. We've been eligible for trades now in the NBA for, what, a month now? And we have not seen anything. And the deadline's coming up a month from today. So will we see anything coming down that pipeline?
Yeesh.
Are you just hoping that the Blazers do anything?
No, I don't have any perspective on what they should do. I know they got they have a couple expiring contracts, but I don't know they want them.
Yeah.
Hey, like, you know, like Whiteside and Bazemore are the guys you're like clamoring for at this point.
Hey, here's a question that I have about circling back. There was a text that came in. Have you heard this? Because I don't know if this is to be a fact, because I have not read this or seen this. It said, when talking about the cheating, it says it's more widespread than these two teams, Astros and Red Sox, that is. And that's the reason why the punishment is not as harsh as the owners wanted, because Boston informed MLB that they know of at least 8 other teams that were doing the exact same thing from P1 Nick.
Yeah, it could be.
I have not heard that, but...
Well, it's just like steroids. I mean, you might sit there and say that a couple guys were really good at it. They were stronger. They were just good hitters, and they optimized.
Right?
Optimized themselves.
Being at home.
Wait, yeah, but there were a lot more than just two guys taking three, because all we're focusing on is, I'll give you four. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Sammy Sosa, and Mark McGwire. Those are the ones that get all the major heat.
Don't forget Rafael Palmeiro.
Yeah, nobody talks about Rafael Palmeiro.
Still playing.
Well, trying to.
All right.
What are they going to do with the rest of the players? What are they going to do with any of that?
Suspend them all. Make them all play short season single A ball, so they play against the Hillsboro Hops next year.
If there wasn't so much money, they wouldn't need to cheat.
Facts.
What they do to Mark Cuban and make him donate a bunch of money to charity. Like your salaries have to go, whatever you were going to make this year, whatever you were going to profit this year, has to go to a good cause.
Well, yeah, I'll tell you one thing that would happen.
Union's not going to allow you to do that.
I'll tell you one thing that would happen. A lot of players would have personal charities popping up. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. 501c3 just popped up.
Jose Altuve Human Fund is here. Let's do this. All right. Let's get to it. It is 7:06.
What's hot? Who cares?
What's hot and why is it cool?
They're cool because they're hot.
Hot and cool with Dusty and Cam. Your morning dose of positivity ripped from the headlines.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Hey, Portland Trail Blazers are back in action tonight. They will be in Houston, 6:30. ESPN is the tip. Last night, Houston lost in Memphis, 121-110.
You know what's incredible?
Yeah, no.
James Harden is averaging 37.4 points per game. 37.4
Is that good?
Points per game.
Is that
That's
good?
Unbelievable. In this, even in all of basketball history, now I know he puts up a crap ton of shots. What, I think, Buck, you were telling us his stat from playing the Knicks the other day, where he only got 9 for 30 or something.
And yeah, he was 9 for 34 and 4 of 20 on threes.
And all those.
Oh,
it's
my
still,
God.
It's still averaging. He's on his way to averaging 40 points a game.
Well, hey, you can't have 40 points a game if you don't shoot 40 times. You got to get those shots
still,
up, man.
I got to give credit, man. That's incredible.
Westbrook did not play last night. He will play tonight against the Blazers.
You're as cold as ice.
I think the world cringed when they saw this report last night. Missouri State set to hire Art Briles. Missouri State has reversed course. The FCS program going, we wouldn't hire Art Briles. That guy's a terrible person. So they hired Bobby Petrino instead.
Well, Bobby Petrino's not a bad guy. He just was on a bike ride with his secretary.
There is a...
What's wrong with... What are you doing?
What's his name? Satterfield, who took over at Louisville?
Yeah.
For Bobby Petrino?
What did Bobby Petrino do?
There is a scathing piece in The Athletic about how Bobby Petrino, his players were afraid to go and talk to him. So there were guys that were like 2 and 3 years on campus that had never been to the coach's office at Louisville because he ran his program behind a veil of fear. It was a pretty bad article that The Athletic painted Bobby Petrino in a terrible
light. Okay, that's pathetic because every coach from probably 1930 to 19 to 2000 ran their not every coach. A lot of coaches were terrified of Don James.
It's 2020 though, man.
Terrified. You should be afraid of your head football coach. You should
really?
Be.
Really?
Yes.
Afraid of him?
Yes. Yes.
I understand if like you're afraid if you do something
wrong.
Come
on, take it with a grain of salt. You should have respect and a little bit of fear. You have to be the point where, come on, I don't see a bunch of players jumping out here telling us where is the real report. You can't just say players. Where are the guys coming out saying,
well, I don't know their names.
Talk to them.
Well, it was in The Athletic article. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know the players' names.
And everybody runs a music program where we're all happy and kumbaya. Do you think everybody loves to go and sit and talk with Nick Saban, or is there a little bit of fear? There's a little bit of fear.
Absolutely a little bit.
Do you think Bill Belichick has a little bit of fear?
Oh, absolutely.
Or there's a crap ton of fear?
Having a little bit of that fear there is good, but it painted it in a different light. I'll just say that. Like, guys were legitimately afraid to go and speak to Bobby Petrino. Like, I don't know. I'll email you the article.
I think that's a bad thing.
Still, I don't see what's good. I don't see what's wrong.
I don't. The problem is.
All right, we'll talk about a retirement in the National Football League that it was too soon. But we have to talk about the guy who's saying, no, 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 no. No. Larry Fitzgerald is coming back for his 17th season in the National Football League.
So cool.
That is awesome.
He is. Talk about that. Kyler Murray's probably pretty happy. He's still got his inside receiver. Still got a guy to still make plays. I mean, until the league kicks you out, league's not kicking him out. He's still productive. Helps his team. That's an up-and-coming team.
Are
really
you kidding?
Is.
He's a great receiver still. And Cliff Kingsbury's offense is perfect for him. Yeah. You know?
And also, I think that a lot of players in the league really respect Larry Fitzgerald to the point where they won't hit him.
Yeah,
the way they would have 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, it really is true, and that's awesome that guys can extend their career.
All right, well, Larry Fitzgerald, he only needs 6,000 more yards to catch Jerry Rice. My God, that's incredible. Incredible. 6,000 yards, and he's going into
his 18th
year.
Jerry stuck it out a little too long.
Hanging on. Hanging on.
You're as cold as ice.
All right, Alex Cora fired as the Boston Red Sox manager, won the 2018 World Series. This is all a product of the sign-stealing saga that is going down in baseball. Astros and Red Sox both implicated in it. Red Sox will be punished for their role in sign-stealing. Major League Baseball, not sure when, but the Red Sox apparently went and talked to MLB, and the information they got, it was enough to fire him.
Well, it's not going to be any higher than $5 million. We know that because that's the cap. That's as much as they can do. And since they already fired their head coach, they'll just fire their general manager. So what are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are we expecting them to do?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And yeah, it is.
We kind of already know what's going to happen. You're not going to do anything to the players.
Well, you may come down a little bit harder on them because you hired the ringleader of it, you know? Maybe? Hell, I don't know.
No, we don't know.
No, I don't know what Major League Baseball's doing.
We're guessing.
And also that we talked about that text about the Altuve stats. It was reversed at on the road in 2018. Jose Altuve hit 349. At home, he hit 283. That seems odd. So he was actually better on the road, but the Houston Astros as a team and as a whole, they were better at home than they were on the road. That's undoubtable. They got an advantage. We know it. We absolutely know it. Joe Moorhead is the offensive coordinator at Oregon? That news broke by Brett Big Murphy, and yes, that was a question. That was a question that I just asked because there are conflicting reports. The Oregonian is reporting the search is still ongoing, but Brett McMurphy of Stadium and Justin Hopkins of Scoop Duck both saying that it will be Joe Moorhead to take over as offensive coordinator.
It's a great hire if they are able to grab that, and this does work out. Maybe they're just ironing out the logistics to it, the numbers and everything at this point. They're afraid to kind of jump in because Joe Moorhead might be entertaining multiple offers, NFL offers, and there could be anything that's going on. What kind of offer would he need to really to lock it down?
That's a great question. And
because there's a lot of NFL jobs. There's a lot of guys out there. A lot of NFL opportunities.
Let's dive into that a little bit more. Plus, you mentioned the NFL opportunities. LSU has lost somebody to the National Football League as well. We'll discuss, break it all down. Joe Moorhead, and learn a little bit about him as well. I got some notes on Moorhead in kind of how he runs his offense and what to expect if he is in fact the guy at Oregon. It is 7:14 on the Fan. All right, a tweet from Bruce Feldman about 13 minutes ago says, so now we have Brett McMurphy reported yesterday that Joe Moorhead, former Mississippi State head coach and Penn State offensive coordinator, will be the next offensive coordinator at Oregon. And Bruce Feldman says, among the offensive coordinator candidates for the Oregon vacancy, I'm told that Tulane's Will Hall, Rams assistant Jed Fish, and LSU analyst Jorge Munoz really impressed in the interview process before Cristobal has opted to go with Joe Moorhead. So it appears now you have the big guns all saying it will be Joe Moorhead to be the offensive coordinator, former Penn State OC and Mississippi State head coach. We talked briefly about kind of what his philosophies are offensively.
Yeah, what do you think it is?
Well, it is a lot of it is he is a guy that in this is all just reading up and reading interviews that he's done, listening to a couple interviews last night that he did on what his offense is, right? And here is what he says. He said that it's all about meshing of versatility in his offense. That's what he wants to do. Okay. Here is a SB Nation article with Bill Conley that he did where he went down the pillars of his offense. Okay. One is use the same personnel as much as possible, right? This is one of the things that we talked about on Monday with the San Francisco 49ers. I absolutely love about Kyle Shanahan is he says defensive coordinators have a problem with personnel, not as much, the formation. So if you get a personnel on the field, say, one back, one tight end, or two backs, one tight end, whatever, 21, 11, whatever personnel it is. He says, we want to go and put as many formations at you out of those personnel groupings. So he is a guy that will formation you off of mismatches.
Okay.
I don't. He said defensive coordinators don't really know the formation you're going to line up in. So when you're in a certain personnel grouping, you have to make a defensive call, and it's going to match up against the formation that they can align in.
Well, that's great. Right? I like the philosophy. I like the sound. I like the experience. I got to give anybody that's hired as a coach, you got to wait and see. Wait and see what they produces. Wait and see kind of how the players respond to it and how the calls mesh with your head coach. I said it before. Your head coach really is the identity of this. Will they work in conjunction with each other? Of course they would.
He is.
But will there be some headbutting moments? I would expect maybe a little bit of that because it's always, yeah. It's the honeymoon stage when you sit in an interview and say, yeah, I'm going to run this and I like this and like this. But there might be a couple situations where they're on the headsets with each other, which is typical. That's what coaching staffs do and they work together. I wonder how much Coach Cristobal will still put his thumbprint on this. That's my word of the day. Two words. Compound word, thumbprint. It's two words. How much he will still be involved in the offensive mindset and scheme.
So what to expect, if you see a personnel grouping, he's going to stick with it. That's what he likes. Number two, we talked about this earlier. Empowering the quarterback is something that he's big on. And I was, you know, what the hell does that mean?
Well, it means that if you want to be relevant in today's college football game, you better have a quarterback that can play.
Well, and this is kind of these are his quotes on what that means. He is talking about, you know, one of the benefits of our system is that we don't have to stick with the play. If it's a look that you don't like, just get into the play that attacks that look. And so he'll run a ton of RPOs, but he empowers the quarterback. He gives basically a recommendation on the play that he thinks the defense will line up in. And he puts a lot on his quarterback. Hey, if you don't like the play, go get into something you want to run, okay? And he gives him that liberty to, and he'll recommend a few plays that he thinks will be good against different looks that you get, which is let the quarterback make the decision because he's the guy who's on the field making the call.
Yeah, that's almost today's modern offense. That's not revolutionary for me. That's what RPOs are. There are three chances. You can run, you can pass, you can option. That's what RPO really does mean. There are multiple options and multiple things. Checks, one side, all those. That's standard college football now.
But he's saying get out of the RPO. Check out. If they're in man, he says we don't want to run our RPO game at all.
Yeah.
I'm giving the quarterback some free reign there. And it is different from an Oregon standpoint because how many times do we see Justin Herbert step up to the line of scrimmage, do his fake clap, look over to the sideline, hey, what do you guys want me to do? And then go and get it. His is, hey, I know our preparation leading up, you can do whatever the hell you want. Don't look at me. It's your call.
Well, I don't know for certain, and I don't know if you do. I'm not questioning what that is. I don't know for certain that Coach Arroyo or Cristobal did not give Justin Herbert more options. Looking over and looking for a play call might be something that says, hey, we're waiting to see if the defense moves, if it shifts, mm-hmm. if it does anything, and then we'll make that call. Then within that call, you have an option to pick from there. None of us are in those meetings, so we don't know what Justin Herbert had or what he did. We do know that Justin Herbert could play, and empowering a quarterback is what you should just. That's remedial number one. Mm-hmm. You're learning that at if you're a good quarterback, you're learning that as a freshman in high school.
Yeah,
you're learning how to make those decisions.
And this is one where he's saying our system, you'll learn it inside and out. So go ahead. Here's one that you got. Slap a read onto nearly every run to never put yourself in a position in which your quarterback does not have options. I'd say, he says, quote, I'd say 85 to 90% of the runs we call has some second phase or a tag on it. Mm-hmm. So that's your RPO or yep. a read for the quarter. True read for the quarterback. Okay. Rarely do we just call a run and hand it off without having the quarterback read somebody at the first, second, and third levels. So you will get mesh points. You will actually have a read on every single play where remember Justin Herbert not pulling it. That was a criticism of Oregon players. One of his third core philosophy is tag a read on every sure. run play.
Well, just like watching Oklahoma, just like watching Alabama and even LSU and certainly Clemson, coordinators and good offensive play callers now, like a Joe Brady, who's now, I mean, Joe Brady might be a head coach next year. I mean, that's what this guy, I mean, right? he's been elevated so quickly and put as this czar of football because he did something revolutionary. Well, no, he brought a system that the Saints run to a college athletes who are littered with 4 and 5 stars. So you still need some Jims and Joes. That's kind of what this is. How smart can these guys, how quick can they adapt? Is the terminology going to be the same? Are they going to have certain keys and words that are along the same line? Because sometimes when somebody brings in a new system, it's learning a whole new language. That will be how fast these guys can learn it in the spring.
Yeah. And this is one that I really like. And this kind of goes to that point. And what you're saying is, he said, it's about the players, not the system.
Yes.
Defenses will always try to dictate the reads that you make. We got to stay one step ahead of them. And so one thing that he is in this is, he is what was the term that he said earlier in the show? I have to go back and find that quote, but it was, it's about versatility and flexibility. Oh, it was, a synthesis of a bunch of the most versatile offenses in the country is what he wants to be. Yeah. Right. So
I like the way that sounds.
It's one that's has baked as much flexibility as possible in both the tactics and quarterback.
Why pigeonhole yourself into one spot?
He's not.
Why say, yeah, I am a I back running game. We are a two back scheme. Why pigeonhole yourself into that?
And I think one of the things that, you know, Oregon fans were so frustrated in is he is stay one step ahead of the defense, right? How many times, what was the biggest criticism Marcus Arroyo got? And even Chip Kelly got this a lot as well. And every coordinator gets it, is why are you doing the same thing over and over again, right? And that is kind of the stay one step ahead of the defense. It's about the players on the field. And that doesn't just mean the offensive players. He says it means about the defensive players as well. You know, it's about the players, not the scheme or the system. So he says the success of our offense isn't contingent upon one phase being that much better than the other. So that's kind of what you're getting. And then he will always adapt. He says, always never stopped adapting. The fifth element of our philosophy is to do more with the man than the system, which is basically building off of number four. So those are your five pillars. Does that sound like the guy who gets Duck fans excited? You know, I mean, does that get you excited as a hire for offensive coordinator? Every stop he's had, Fordham, UConn, Akron, Penn State, Mississippi State, production's gone up.
Yeah, I think it's good. I don't know. I want coaches to prove it. I think he's already proved he's a successful coach. Now, does he work well with what Oregon wants to represent? Let's hope so. If you're an Oregon fan, let's hope so, because you're going to have continuing great recruits. The recruiting classes are starting to pile up. How you implement your system, but can you keep Joe? That's the other thing. When you hire a really good, talented coach who's somebody that everyone's going to come calling, you have success. Next thing you know, you're doing the same hiring process. It's tough, but that's what you do when you're a great program. You go after big guys and you develop and you bring in and you learn more. And that's it's not a punishment. But success, everybody wants a part of it.
Yeah. Joe Moorhead, expected to be named Oregon's offensive coordinator. The five pillars of his offense, according to an interview he did with SB Nation, as Bill Connolly, use the same personnel as much as possible and formation them with that personnel to create mismatches. Empower the quarterback. He can check at the line of scrimmage. Slap a read onto every run that they have. So your reads for your quarterbacks and your receivers in the RPO game. It's about the players, not the system. And the fifth one is never stop adapting. That is a little get to know Joe Moorhead. It sounds like the next offensive coordinator for the Oregon Ducks, according to Bruce Feldman and Brett McMurphy, two big-time national reporters. All right, Duck fans, let us know what you think on the text line 55305. Is that exciting to you? And it sounds like a pretty drastic change from what Marcus Arroyo was here at the University of Oregon. Also, coming up next, Luke Kuechly. He decides to hang it up, and it's a big hit to the Carolina Panthers and something that we may have to start rethinking. Here's Buck with SportsCenter. All right, let's get a couple quick texts on Oregon's offensive coordinator. It does look like Bruce Feldman, Brett McMurphy now reporting that it's going to be a foregone conclusion will be Joel.
Yeah, I'll start it off. This text says, here's what I think. Another decade of dominance over the Huskies.
Does it, like, and this is a question that was popping up on social media yesterday. It's a legit question. When we talked about John Donovan being hired as the OC there.
I honestly have no idea who John Donovan is. I looked on Wikipedia.
Well, isn't that the guy that got canned for Joe Moorhead at Penn State?
Yeah.
And then they went up.
Yeah, I have no idea who the person is. Zero. Mm-hmm. And is he a good coach? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Was he a former head coach? I have no idea.
Yeah.
You just got to put trust in what your head coach wants. The same thing I say about Coach Cristobal. He could probably hire whoever he is, in and out, in and out. I look at the head coach always as the guy. And he, if the offense isn't working, if the defense isn't working, it's on the head football coach. That's why he's the head football coach. It's his identity and what he wants. So stop blaming stinking offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators, because they're all in meetings together, and that's the head coach doing it. And if he doesn't like it, he'll make the change. Trust me, he'll want to make the change because it affects his job.
Yeah. This text just says, I like Cristobal's hires, not just his old boys. He goes out and gets the best available. And that is one thing you got to give Mario Cristobal some credit for, man. He has gone out in Andy Avalos and Joe Moorhead, as it appears, as offensive coordinator. Those are two guys that, hey, man, he puts his ego to the side and he wants to get the best guy.
Well, what
best
is that?
Guy for the job.
Help me understand that one. What mean putting your ego aside? What, help me understand that.
Well, you know that they will come in, and if they do succeed, they get a lot of credit. Like Andy Avalos, he got a ton of credit this season for the jump that the Ducks made. And a lot of it has to do with, hey, a lot of those guys just got older, a year older in season. But his scheme and just saying, hey, if these guys succeed, they're going to succeed. But my program is going to win, and we're going to go win a Rose Bowl. And then at the end of the day, I'm going to be the guy on the podium with the Rose Bowl, given the chance and stuff. And it's a good old boys network. You know coaching.
Yeah, I know. But I've never felt, since the day Coach Cristobal was hired, that he was a person that cared about just himself and his ego.
No. Yeah.
So, but
and I'm not
because Nick Saban is as confident as there is anybody out there. Does he always give credit to his OCs and DCs and all his staff when he goes on the podium?
I don't know.
So is he?
He criticizes him a lot, and berates him on the sideline.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it takes. It's so, and I look at. I think great coaches, because the jury's still out on who is a great or an elite or what it is. I think Coach Cristobal is an unbelievably good coach.
Yeah,
that's already been shown, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that just doesn't sit well with me, because I'm not saying that's not my mindset of looking at leadership when it comes to coaches, is to immediately say because he went out of his comfort zone, he hired people. Well, that's his job.
Well, but we see it all the time that is the downfall of a lot of coaches is, you know, we're seeing with Mark D'Antonio at Michigan State. He's done a phenomenal job, but there's an unwillingness to move on from his longtime assistant. Same thing that Oregon got.
Well, he's in Michigan State. I mean,
same thing Oregon ran into with Mark Helfrich, you know? There was this, we've had the same coaches here for 30 years. Why change? You know, in that that sort of thing, like you get familiar, you have these guys that you know and that you're friends with, and those are the guys you go and hire. Cristobal saying, I don't have to know you. I just want to get the best damn coach here. And that is maybe not as much ego as it is, hey,
intelligence.
I'm going to sit here and I'm going to go and do my due diligence. And maybe it might hurt a friendship that I have.
Yeah.
But because I pass over one of my buddies. I'm going to do it for the best of the team.
From the perspective is, I think that college is always way above. When you talk about elevating and developing and understanding and bringing these coaches, college is way above the NFL. NFL is so incestuous. It's brutal. I'll look at staffs and I look at new hires and staffs and I'll go, oh my gosh, that guy's still there. He's coaching. He's doing that. He's there. He's around. It is brutal.
You know,
brutally incestuous. College football is always about quality control guy, developing, bringing up a young guy, letting him move on, allowing somebody, saying, hey, let's get you to this spot. They're more empowering in college than they are in the NFL. NFL is a massive good old boy network.
That a couple years ago when the Broncos were like careening off the side of the cliff, I remember you going through their coaching staff and there was like two or three guys that you were like, oh my God, really? He's still there? He's still coaching in the National Football League? That one sticks out to me. I think it was when the Von Miller farting came in. Like you knew that assistant coach. Who was that coach? Where he was fining Von Miller for farting in the
oh, meetings. Yeah. Oh, gosh. It'll come to me in a second. I think he's currently Denver's defensive line coach.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
And we went through, and there's like three coaches on that staff that you're like, those guys are still around, and they weren't great when you were in the league. It is amazing that those guys.
Well, it's hard to find guys that have the experience of it. That's what's, I think it's pretty cool about college is when you're young, you're a little more you're willing to learn.
Yeah.
That's my only, when I say about the experience of potentially this Joe Moorhead thing is that he's experienced, he's been around, he's been knowledgeable, he understands exactly what his system, and he's probably going to bring in some staffs or maybe some younger guys that he's going to help develop. And they're like, look, this is what we're trying to do. We're trying to develop young talent. I always want to be around guys that have new ideas, new things, new thoughts. I kind of feel like that's what Coach Cristobal really is.
Yep.
That's stuck in some way.
No, and that's a great thing if you're a fan of that program, is going outside the program to find the guys that fit what you want to do. All right, let's go off the rail, shall we? Subaru, they had to apologize yesterday for the new name of their car. It's a doozy. Next on The Fan.
What in God's name are we doing?
What?
Most sports talk segments are designed to keep the average fan informed while sparking traditional debates.
I have another story that will take you off the rails.
This is not that segment.
A fungal spore.
Growing in his lungs.
It's time to get away from the games.
He choked out a mountain lion and saved his life.
And get into the most bizarre, shocking, and hilarious news stories of the day.
Do you understand that most of the country thinks that you're one of the stupidest people around right now?
It's time for Off the Rails.
Millennial dogs are like, nope.
With Dusty and Cam in the morning.
They crossed their paws and said, I'm done with it.
On 1080.
Stupid covers all genres.
The Fan.
All righty. So Eric Fisher of the Kansas City Chiefs had one heck of a celebration during the divisional round game against the Houston Texans when he went and he started pouring beer all over himself. Well, he took those beers from that fan, and I said, that's probably like $30 a beer, man. And it was people were commenting that it was after last call.
It can't be $30 a beer in Kansas City.
No, $30 of beer.
Do you think two tall boys are $30 in cans?
Probably like $15 a beer.
Kansas City, really? Of all that place in Missouri? I wouldn't, you know, I guess
I'm just saying, like, is $15 out of the realm of possibility?
I think that's
there?
Only charged in it at Moda Center. I swear to God, we have the highest beer prices in all of America. Well, No. I should change that. Levi Stadium. Second to Levi. I can't breathe. Second. Levi was like $18. For a 12-ounce beer.
At the Rose Bowl, it was $17 for a Coors Light.
A single can?
$18 for a...
Was it a 22 or was it a 12?
I don't...
24?
I didn't drink any, but I just looked at the sign. It was damn expensive. But,
Well, it's Rose Bowl. They can charge you that.
Yeah. And so Budweiser, they noticed that it was Budweiser's and Bud Light's. And so they went out. And they said, hey, we got a whole bunch of buds and some other surprises coming your way. They're going to hook him up with some free booze. And they're going to give him some swag for it. Because he got his beers taken and he did it for the celebration. So good on Budweiser. I knew that guy was going to get something out of Eric Fisher taking his beers. You know, not just a little notoriety and a little TV time. It was one of the great celebrations we've seen in the postseason.
If he would have dumped it down his mouth, is that worse?
I mean, no. I don't think it was bad at all. I think it was all great.
But it was during the game. Eh. I know it's alcohol stigma. Did you see the referee? Or the referee. My God. Oh, my gosh. Buck, did you say this yesterday? The cop that was in LSU's... Was that you that mentioned this?
No, I heard about that, though.
Oh, there was a cop in LSU's... in the locker room.
Afterwards, it was me that said it, that they threatened to arrest guys, yeah.
Oh, that was you. Okay, I'm sorry. It was one cop. I just saw the video of it. Yeah. There's an actual video of the cop running around with guys who have cigars. He's totally buzzkilling, and then Odell Beckham starts dancing in front of the cop, mocking him. Odell Beckham is winning the internet with fake money. By the way, it was fake money yesterday.
No.
That's the word of the fake money.
Conflicting report from Buck earlier today.
Buck's, okay, Buck, well, no, tell us what it is.
I listened to an interview this morning with Joe Burrow from the morning after the championship game. He said he'd slept for 45 minutes, and the interviewers asked him, okay, so what was the deal with Odell giving out that money? Did you get some of that? And he said, well, now that I'm no longer a student-athlete, I can say, yeah, Odell gave me cash. So that's not to say he couldn't
get monopoly money.
Maybe he was giving an underclassman the fake money and Joe Burrow the real money, but it sure sounds like it was real money.
Oh, man. Oh, this text. I was in KC in December. It was like $12 each. Not too bad.
No,
so
it's not too
it was $24 in beer.
All right, this person says at the Rose Bowl, $15 for a 22. That's about
for
right.
$15 for a 22.
For a 22. Now, if that would have been
the
a 12,
one?
That's out of control.
Maybe that was the domestic, micro brews, but that sign was aggressive. Oh, Pio and Anthony, I was a thirsty victim to that $17 beer. Only one, though.
Jeez.
All right. Also, from off the rails, this is a story that I'm not sure what to think of this. Subaru has come out and had to apologize because of the new model of car that has been unveiled. At the 2020 Singapore Motor Show, the Forester Unlimited Customized Kit Special Edition is being criticized because of the acronym that it makes.
Say that again. Forester?
The Forester Ultimate Customized Kit Special.
Oh, it took me a while to get that. Yeah. Okay, I got it.
Yep. And
Who cares?
Well, they're going by the acronym, and everybody's like, wait a minute, that's an unfortunate name for a car. But, I mean,
great marketing, by the way, Subaru. Well done.
Yeah.
Come on, you mean to tell me that a focus group didn't already know that and heading into the marketing plan?
Here's what they said. We apologize for any negative feedback this may have caused. Subaru has had the name removed from the car at the Singapore Auto Show. We work hard to build a strong brand and image for the company, and naming the vehicle in no way reflects the values and standards that hold true. Furthermore, we will do our best to protect our brand's integrity. They're saying that it is not going to be available in the United States market, and they've gone on to rename the vehicle.
Yeah, but they neglected to mention the positive feedback. What about all the positive feedback?
What about all the positive feedback?
Like, there's a bunch of people that are going to be driving Subarus now because of it.
Bus drives a Subaru himself.
Yeah,
my car. Time for an upgrade.
My car Fs.
Yeah.
That's what it says, right?
Yeah. By the way, do you drive a Forester?
I do.
It isn't only two-wheel drive, though.
No, I have all-wheel drive.
All-wheel drive.
Wait, do they make Subarus that are...
I don't know.
In high school, I had a Ford Explorer that was two-wheel drive.
Well, you lived in the Bay Area.
But
nobody needs any four-wheel drive there.
What is the point of doing that?
You have the cargo storage area, but you're not actually going to the mountains. At least I didn't have a utility I wasn't using.
That is actually true. Like, you make a good point. Like, in the Bay Area, or if you live in Southern California, why would you need a four-wheel drive car? Like, unless you're going out to, like, the dunes or something, or out into the desert to drive.
Lifted trick.
It was a little bit comical when we started going to the mountains a lot my senior year, and people are like, oh, can you drive? And I'm like, no, I'm going to need to borrow a car.
Because I can't get up
there.
But
you have an SUV. Yeah, but not the right kind.
That's stupid.
Yeah, we're going to need chains. We're going to need chains. Was it rear wheel drive, or was it front wheel?
I don't remember. Gosh. Whatever the Ford Explorer was.
Okay. Also, one other thing. Have anybody here been to the In-N-Out yet?
I'm not going to drive an hour Kaiser. To In-N-Out, although I might think about it. No, I haven't. I consider it a treat. So usually the treat is you catch it when you're traveling.
Okay. So I know people that have been going down and driving down there, and I still haven't.
I mean, it's good, but.
I haven't heard of anybody saying that. There's a couple tricks that you need to know, but are the lines still aggressively long? Or is that something that has finally passed? Because I'm not going until those lines have passed. Like, this is the thing with the Popeye's chicken sandwich. I went and got one, by the way. Mm. It was a good chicken sandwich. But I wasn't about to go and wait in a 20-minute line or 2 hours, as some people were doing. So I just want to get some intel on if the lines are gone or not, so we can all just kind of now start migrating down. Because it's really not that bad of a drive to get down there. 45 minutes to an hour? That's not a terrible drive to go do that.
Is it worth it? Some people love it. In-N-Out. I just wonder how much longer before it makes its way right here into Portland. Actually, I don't think it'll make it into Portland. I think it goes west side. Most definitely, it's got to go to the west.
Yeah,
side.
It'll go west.
It'll
side.
Go over there.
But and how long do you think it takes to migrate up? Because
that's
it was
a great
like
question.
4 years ago they opened up the one in Medford, right?
So we'll get one in the next decade, probably.
Yeah. All right. I'd be down with that. But that one. Look, you can't have one in an area as big as Portland, though, because those lines are going to be insane.
Oh, they love
forever.
They love it.
All right. We got people saying that it's still wrapped around the lot. Drove by Sunday. Lines were ridiculous still. So maybe just go two-hour-long line yesterday. I left. Yeah. Not worth it.
Yeah, this is a good point. Somebody said go to Killer Burger. Killer Burger has a great – they do a protein wrap with the – it's better.
I love Killer Burger.
The one on Cedar Hills I just saw yesterday, Mr. LaMichael James tweeted out it's the one-year anniversary of him having that location.
Yeah, he owns that place.
He owns all of them or just owns
just that
one?
No,
Cedar Hills.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, because there's one in the Couve where I go. Killer Burger does a great job. They're awesome.
They are awesome.
I just take the bun off. They'll do protein style, just like what In-N-Out does.
All right. Do you got a local? Do we got a local burger ranking that we may have to do here now? Because Killer Burger's up there.
Yeah, it is.
It's definitely up there.
Definitely up there.
And now that we don't have Stanich's, like, what are we gonna do? You guys don't know Stanich's, do you?
I don't.
I know of it, but I've never had it.
Oh man, so good. So we'll have to do those rankings. Send them. Text us 55305. All right. Coming up next hour, we have got Oliver Moroney of the Big Three. Big announcement that they just made. Plus, talk some NBA as well. Dustin Cam on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.